Good to see all of you prepared to study from this segment of the Old Testament, identifying the kings of Israel and the kings in Judah and the events that transpired during their reigns. In our study this morning, if you would please open your Bibles to 2 Kings chapter 3. 2 Kings chapter 3. There's a little bit of overlap, and I don't really know how to avoid that as we discuss the kings of Israel and the kings of Judah because of their interaction with each other. When we try to discuss what each one did and follow the chart that's in our lesson book, if you'll turn to that chart on page 104, 103, 104, then on into page 105, time permitting, we'll talk about these kings. But in the context of 2 Kings chapter 3, we read of Jehoram, the son of Ahab, how that he began to reign in over Israel in Samaria in the 18th year of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, and reigned 12 years. Now, we're not going to go back and redo everything that we've already done, but what we want to see and be reminded of is that the period of time that we're talking about in this segment of Old Testament history is not something that's just isolated, but it has a place in the fulfillment of God's scheme to save man, to bring Jesus into the world. We noted that Moses had told them when the nation promise had been fulfilled and he was bringing the children of Israel up out of the land of Egypt that if you worship and serve other gods, he will destroy you from off the good land that he's going to bring you into. Joshua told them the same thing after he had brought them into the land as their inheritance. We note that during the days of what kings was the kingdom identified as the United Kingdom? What three kings? Saul, David, and Solomon. How long did Saul reign? 40 years. David and Solomon. 40 years. Now, the reason I said that identifies for us 120 years of the period of history during the United Kingdom. How long did the period of the judges reign? Just over 300 years. Nice round number. If you want to go with 300, that's acceptable. And that tells us then that we've got 300 plus 100, and that puts us up to 400 approximate years. And when we back that thing up to the conquering of the land, to the time then that they came up out of the land of Egypt, the 40 years of wandering, to the time that we've discussed, we're looking in the neighborhood of approximately 500 years. 500 years. And the promise of God is still developing to bring Jesus, the Savior, into the world. Rehoboam, through his foolishness, divided the kingdom. And now we're discussing these very kings. The first king of the northern 10 tribes was Jeroboam. What did Jeroboam bring from Egypt to Israel? Calf worship. That's right. That's right. We note that there were how many good kings in the northern kingdom? None. Zero. Not a single one of them were good kings. It's just varying degrees of wickedness. In the southern kingdom, there were some who were good. Not near all of them. And of course, we want to talk about which ones were good and which ones were not. Now, this chart, I hope that it will be helpful to you. I have two or three of these that you won't find in your lesson book. Tried to put these together to be helpful in our study. If you want them, please email me. Let me know. You can either email the church's website and Richard will forward that to me, or email me personally and I'll be happy to send these to you. Or if you don't have access that way, let me know and I'll make a copy, a hard copy for you. But this to me is very helpful to see who is king under what, whether the northern or the southern kingdom, and to note then the names that are incorporated identifying that king. I've gone over this a number of times. We're going to go over it several more times because this is a period of time that gets a little bit confusing. In the southern kingdom of Judah, Jehoshaphat had a son named Jehoram. In the northern kingdom of Israel, Ahab, wicked king, had a son named Jehoram. Do we see that? Ahab also had a daughter named Athaliah. Ahab also had a son named Ahaziah. Jehoram over here had a son also named Ahaziah. Now, the difficulty is that Jehoram, the son of Jehoshaphat, married Athaliah, the daughter of Ahab, the brother of Jehoram, the sister also of Ahaziah. Jehoram and Athaliah, when they married, had a son named Ahaziah. Same name as Athaliah's brother. Okay? Now, when you read down through the text, we note that Ahaziah is also called Jehoahaz. We know that Ahaziah had a son named Joash. We're going to spend some time talking about him, but he's also called Jehoash. And these charts will help you, I think, to keep it a little bit straight and know who you're talking about, whether you're talking about Jehoram over here or Jehoram over here, because we're going to see that there is a period of time in which both Jehorams are reigning. Okay? And in the reading of the text, you need to know which one's which, so you know which one did what. And this chart, perhaps along with the line of the kings in your lesson book, will be helpful to you in doing that. If you'll look on page 105 in your lesson book, page 105 in your lesson book, in the chart there of the kings, you'll note there that Joram, he's referred to, began reigning in Judah, the son of Jehoshaphat over here, in the fifth year of Jehoram, the son of Ahab. So we've got both kings now reigning at the same time, same name, different men. Is that confusing to you? Good. We'll keep that straight and we'll know who did what and alliances that were engaged in and so forth. Now, in the third chapter of 2 Kings, we've noted that Jehoram, the son of Ahab, began to reign. And he reigned, or began, in the 18th year of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah. And we note that he reigned for 12 years. Now, during that period of time, we see that Mesha, the king of Moab, was a sheep master. Now, he had a deal with Ahab, but when Ahab died, he doesn't want to continue that deal with Ahab's son, Jehoram. And so there is a rebellion that takes place here, and Jehoram desires to form an alliance with Jehoshaphat, the king in Judah. Now, we've talked about that, so I'm not going to reiterate all of that. We've talked about how that there was no water for this alliance of the king of Israel, the king of Judah, and the king of Edom, and God provided water, and how then that the enemies of God's people, when they approached this alliance, they saw the water, thinking it to be blood. They believed that in this alliance it had broken down, and they had slaughtered each other, and so what they were looking at was just a big, large pool of blood. Well, we know that wasn't so. And when they charged, we find that they met the armies of Israel and Judah, and the army of the king of Edom. And that proved to be disastrous for them, as you'll see in the third chapter. Now, in this discussion, we want to talk a little bit about Jehoram, the king of Israel, the son of Ahab. Okay, the son of Ahab. There's the alliance, and we see the deliverance in verse 21 and following, how that this league of soldiers has conquered the Moabites. Now, as you continue in that text, let's notice that Israel had all kinds of conflicts with the Syrians. We see evidence of that in 2 Kings chapter 6. Now, the reason we're jumping some is we are going to go back and fill in the blanks and talk about Elisha the prophet. There are a number of chapters that are dedicated to the events of Elisha the prophet, who followed Elijah. But in 2 Kings chapter 6, reading beginning at verse 8, 2 Kings 6, verse 8. It says, "And the king of Syria was warring against Israel. And he took counsel with his servants, saying, in such and such a place shall be my camp." Now, the king of Syria warring against Israel. Now, think carefully with me. Who is he warring against? Who's king in Israel during this time? King in Israel during this time. Who's king in Israel? At the time the king of Syria is warring against Israel in the text of 2 Kings 6. Well, now look at your chart up here. We've got the king of Syria warring against the king of Israel. Be Jehoram. That's right. Jehoram. Now, he became king after the death of Ahaziah, his brother. But this is Jehoram, son of Ahab. Now, you see why that's important. In verse 8 of chapter 6, 2 Kings. Now the king of Syria was warring against Israel. If he was warring against Israel during this time, we're talking about this Jehoram, the son of Ahab, not this man, king of Israel, this man. Ahaziah was first. And when he died, his brother Jehoram. No. No. Okay. Now the circumstance of verses 8 and following are, the king of Syria says, "I'm going to make my camp right here." And the problem is, in verse 9, it tells us that the man of God sent unto the king of Israel, saying, "Beware that thou pass not such a place, for thither the Syrians are coming down." Ain't that simple?
So this is, if you're following the story of Israel, we know that Ahab was killed.
Well, Ahab's already been killed at this point, but that's true. Yes.
Right. So then that's how we keep up with the history.
Yeah.
And say Israel, then you know it's on the other side, still in Judah.
Right. Exactly right. Keeping up with the line of events on the timeline, Ahab's already been killed, Ahaziah is already dead, and now his son, Ahab's son, Jehoram, is on the throne as king of Israel. Okay? Now, the king of Syria, he's got a problem. His problem is, he said, "I'm going to camp right here. And so when the Israelites come this way, I can whoop up on them." Now, that's a very loose paraphrase. Okay? But the problem is, Israel is told by the man of God, that is the prophet of God, that the king of Syria is camped here. He has an ambush set up for you right here, so don't pass that way. Well, now, can you imagine setting up an ambush and there's not anybody to ambush, and time passes and there's no army that comes your way, so there's nobody to fight? So he says, "I'm going to set my camp up over here. And then when Israel comes, I'll whoop up on them." But the man of God says to the people of Israel, "Don't go down that way because the king of Syria has his army there." Now here's the problem in verse 11. It says, "And the heart of the king of Syria was sore troubled for this thing. And he called his servants and said unto them, Will ye not show me which of us is for the king of Israel?" What does he think's going on? There's a spy in the camp. That's right. We've got a mole here, and somebody's telling the king of Israel all my plans. Now in verse 12, one of his servants said, "Nay, my lord, O king, but Elisha, the prophet that is in Israel. Now we know who that man of God is that's referred to in these previous verses. Who is that? That's Elisha. Elisha. There's a prophet in Israel, and what does he do? He tells the king of Israel the words that thou speakest in thy bedchamber. Now, we think of a bedchamber. What is that? That's in private. That's right. Elisha knows what you're planning. How does he know that? He knows even the very secret words that you say in your bedroom, and he tells them to the king of Israel. And he said, go and see, verse 13, where he is, that I may send and fetch him. And he was told, saying, behold, he is in Dothan. Now, the king of Syria, he wants to get a hold of Elisha and stop Elisha's informing the king of Israel of all of his plans, so he can whip up on, if I may use that expression, the king of Israel. Now, if you'll note in verse 14, it says, therefore sent he thither horses and chariots and a great host, and they came by night and compassed the city about. And when the servant of the man of God was risen early and gone forth, behold, a host with horses and chariots was round about the city. And his servant said unto him, alas, my master, how shall we do? And he answered, fear not. For they that are with us are more than they that are with them. Underscore that, if you will, in your thinking. Elisha and his servant. Elisha said, we got more than they do. Now you've got all the host of the Syrians encompassing the city of Dothan. And Elisha said, don't worry. More on our side than there is on their side. Does that sound reminiscent of the words of Jonathan back years ago? When Jonathan was fighting against the Philistines with only his armor bearer? And he said, numbers don't mean a thing. God doesn't fight with numbers. Now as we look at this text, Elisha said, we got more on our side than they've got on their side. And Elisha prayed, verse 17, and said, Jehovah, I pray thee, open his eyes that he may see. Open whose eyes? My servant. Open his eyes so he can see. And Jehovah opened the eyes of the young man, and he saw, and behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire round about Elisha. And when they came down to him, Elisha prayed unto Jehovah and said, smite this people, I pray thee, with blindness. And he smote them with blindness according to the word of Elisha. Now let's pause right there. What happened to this vast army that Elisha has surrounding him? Do they ever come into play? Oh, I mean, Elisha's army that's in these chariots of fire and all of this. No, they don't come into play. But this is a setting to help the servant of Elisha to see that God's fighting our battles. Now, what happened to the army of Syria? They were struck blind. And Elisha said unto them, this is not the way, neither is this the city. Follow me, and I will bring you to the man whom ye seek. And he led them to Samaria. Now tell me, what's the significance of Samaria? Who's in Samaria? The king. That's right. And what would his name be?
Jehoram.
Yeah. Now, don't get confused here. Let's back up and look at her chart. That is correct, but Samaria was the capital. More importantly, it was the capital of Samaria. That's where the king's palace is. Yes, I'm sorry. Samaria is the capital of Israel. Jerusalem was the capital of Judah. Thank you. So what we want to be reminded of is when Elisha takes the army of the Syrians to Samaria, where does he take him? To where Jehoram is, the king of Israel. That would be more than embarrassing. Yes, it would indeed. Now in verse 20 it says, and it came to pass, when they were come to Samaria, that Elisha said, Jehovah, open the eyes of these men that they may see. And Jehovah opened their eyes and they saw, and behold, they were in the midst of Samaria. And the king of Israel, who's that? Jehoram, that's right, son of
Ahab,
that's right. I have a misnote in my notes here. He said, when I saw them, my father, shall I smite them? Shall I smite them? What is it that Jehoram, the son of Ahab, wants to do to them? I want to kill them all. That's right. Just wipe out the army of Samaria. Now look at the response of Elisha. Army of Syria. What did I say?
Samaria.
Samaria. I'm glad you all are helping me. In verse 22. And he answered, thou shalt not smite them. Wouldest thou smite those whom thou hast taken captive with thy sword and with thy bow? Set bread and water before them, that they may eat and drink, and go to their master. And he prepared great provisions for them, and when they had eaten and drunk, he sent them away, and they went to their master, and the bands of Syria came no more into the land of Israel. Now, as I use the expression, they wound up their ball of yarn and went home. And what I want you to see in that is, you don't have to kill somebody to defeat them. You see, Jehoram, the son of Ahab, all he can think about is his enemies being dead. And they don't have to be dead to be defeated. No, they're captives. They're in your city. You can kill them, but you don't have to. So you feed them like other captives and you send them home.
You might even be better off not killing them because then you have people back home wanting to get revenge. But if they're sent home with their tail between their legs, they're probably going to stay away for a while.
You'd like to think.
Understand how this happened.
You'd like to think. You'd like to think. But time passes. Time passes. You know, sometimes we don't know how much time passes between events. When you look in the text of 2 Kings 6, look at verse 24, please. In verse 24 it says, and it came to pass after this, that Ben-Hadad, king of Syria, gathered all his host and went up and besieged Samaria. Well, now wait a minute. Wasn't it the army of Syria that's just been sent home, as you say, with their tail between their legs? And now here Ben-Hadad, king of Syria, gathers them all up, and he goes back where?
Samaria.
To Samaria. Some time has gone by. Alright, some time has gone by. We don't know how much time has gone by. But now Ben-Hadad brings them back to Samaria. Now notice, if you will, chapter 6, 24 through chapter 7, verse 20. This becomes somewhat of a segment that we want to consider as a whole. When we read beginning in verse 25 of chapter 6, it says, and there was a great famine in Samaria. And behold, they besieged it until an ass's head was sold for 80 pieces of silver, and the fourth part of a cab of dove's dung for 5 pieces of silver. Now, when you get into the conversion of the element of money, and often the element of weights, Old Testament times versus New Testament times, there can be some variation. And when you simply get into the conversion of monetary values and try to convert it to U.S. dollars, you can really get into some difficulties because it doesn't always stay the same. And we see that in our today's market. The value of a dollar, it goes up, it goes down, and so forth. And that's true here. But from what I understand, 80 pieces of silver would be something in the neighborhood of 80 days' wages. Now, don't quote me on that. But that's what one source says to help us to get an idea. Now, if you were to buy an ass's head and you had to pay 80 days' wages for that, David, would you think that would be a bit expensive?
Way expensive.
Well, suppose you're buying over here a cab, and I don't know exactly how much that is, of dove's dung for 5 pieces of silver. I understand that would be something in the neighborhood of 5 days' wages. 5 days' wages. And for what? Yeah. Do you think that because of this famine, the sustenance of life is going to be expensive?
The emotional reference here says one cat equals approximately 2 quarts.
All right. And you worked 5 days for that. Jenny?
That's funny because my marginal reference says a cab is approximately 1 pint, which means that a fourth of a mile would be 4 ounces.
Okay. Okay. Well, we're still not talking about a whole lot of substance here for 5 days' work. Now, this famine was the result of Ben-Hadad besieging the city. Now, don't know who was king prior to this. I don't know. When it identifies verse 8 of chapter 6, the king of Syria was warring against Israel. I don't know that that was Ben-Hadad or Ben-Hadad, as some pronounce it. I don't know. But we do know here who we're talking about. That's why I mentioned that after this, we don't know how much time is involved in that. So that throws a kink in the study. But what we do know is that when you besiege a city, yes, Donna? Of Syria. No, I'm not certain. I'm not certain. Now, according to our lesson book, it has the enemy kings being Ben-Hadad or Ben-Hadad. But I don't know, backing up in the text to verse 8 of chapter 6, if that's the same or not. Yes. That's correct.
So, time passed, but not through that much time.
That's correct. That's correct. Okay. The thing I want us to focus our attention on, however, is the circumstances that exist in Samaria. What do you do when you besiege a city? What was typical in Old Testament times? Even New Testament. You surround them. Nobody in, nobody out. Now, on the surface, we might say, big deal. But what happens over a period of time when you throw a circle around a city?
You starve.
You starve. Very simply. You starve. Now, one of the tactics, I think we've mentioned this in previous studies, that often enemy armies would use, we might refer to it as germ warfare, they would take a diseased body, somebody that died of some horrible disease, and put it on a catapult and throw it over the wall. Well, you put several diseased bodies into a city, what's going to happen? That's right. You spread disease. And you've already got people that are starving. Their immune system is waning. And you throw disease in among them. You don't have to fire a shot. David?
Yeah, this is really... this shows how far that Israel has come. Because way back in Deuteronomy, chapter 4, 8, 28 through 30, if you keep my commandments... things, you'll stay in the land, you'll be blessed, and if you don't, you'll captives, you'll be taken over, you'll be cursed.
That's right.
And part of the law back then was, especially when they came into the land that God gave them, that they don't glean their vineyards, so that the strangers, as well as the people that lived in the land, could have something to eat.
That's true.
And they get out of their crops, and now they've gone from that to starvation.
That's right. That's right. Man, the city of Samaria, just how bad was it? It tells us in verse 26, and as the king of Israel was passing by upon the wall, there cried a woman unto him, saying, "Help, my lord, O king." Well, why does she need help? What's the problem?
Nothing.
Indeed. But more than that, he says, "What aileth thee?" Go ahead.
The lady lied to her. They made an agreement that they would eat her son first, then they ate her son, and then they would eat the other lady's son, but she barely.
That's right. Now, can you imagine being that hungry?
Yeah.
We're going to make a deal. We'll eat your boy today, and we'll eat mine tomorrow. Now, she says, we boil my boy today. We've already eaten him. Or yesterday. Now, today's her turn, and she's hitting. We don't have anything to eat. Now, look, if you will, at verse 31. Then he said, God do so to me, and more also, if the head of Elisha, the son of Shaphat, shall stand on him this day. What is it that Jehoram orders?
Blaming it on Elisha.
That's right. I'm going to kill Elisha. Well, that's kind of like what Jezebel said about Elijah. I'm going to kill you by this time tomorrow. Jehoram is very upset with the prophet of God. In verse 32, it says, but Elisha was sitting in his house, and the elders were sitting with him, and the king sent a man from before him, but ere the messenger came to him, he said to the elders, see ye how this son of a murderer has sent to take away my head. Look, when the messenger cometh, shut the door and hold the door fast against him. He is not sound of, is not the sound of his master's feet behind him. I want to pause right there. I'm going to first kill Elisha, but what does Elisha know? All right, not only is it word sent to kill Elisha, but Jehoram, the king of Israel, he's right behind him. And so he's going to, if I may use the expression, whip up on all of you. So shut the door. Keep them out. Now, picking up the reading at verse 33, we've noted that chapter divisions sometimes occur in unfortunate places. The story continues. There's really not a division of thought here. Verse 33, and while he was yet talking with them, behold, the messenger came down unto him, and he said, behold, this evil is of Jehovah. Why should I wait for Jehovah any longer? And Elisha said, hear ye the word of Jehovah. Thus saith Jehovah, tomorrow about this time shall a measure of fine flour be sold for a shekel, and two measures of barley for a shekel in the gate of Samaria. Several things we want to just throw out here. One is, the gate of a city was kind of like farmer's market. Okay, it's where folks would go and buy and sell. But what was the condition in the city of Samaria? There's not anything to buy and sell. In fact, folks are willing to pay 80 days' wages just for an ass's head. Boil that thing and get the meat off of it. Eating, as you said, bird poop. And paying 5 days' wages for it. And now Elisha says, tomorrow you're not going to be eating things like that. But what you're going to be eating is flour, fine flour, and barley. Now, the purchase price of it is not going to necessarily be giveaway prices. It'll be market prices, but it won't be inflated prices. But you'll be able to buy it at the gate of Samaria. In other words, farmer's market's going to be open. And you'll pay reasonable prices for the things that you want to eat. And you'll be eating good stuff. Well, now look at the response in verse 2. Then the captain on whose hand the king leaned answered the man of God and said, behold, if Jehovah should make windows in heaven, might this thing be. And he said, behold, thou shalt see it with thine eyes, but shalt not eat of it. Now what is it Elisha has told this man? First of all, what does this man say? Does he believe Elisha?
There's no way this can happen.
If the heavens just broke forth like windows and food started falling down to the sky, we won't have anything to eat. Now, can you imagine seeing your plight so pitiful? We're paying these exorbitant prices for an ass's head and for the waste of a bird. And you're saying that tomorrow we're going to be eating good and paying reasonable prices for it? Can't be. Now, Elisha said, it'll be. And you'll see it. But you won't eat it. Now, beginning at verse 3, he says, now there were four lepers, men, at the gate of the entrance of the gate, and they said one to another, why sit we here until we die? Now, somebody finish that story for me. These lepers have a very logical train of thought. If we stay in the city, what's going to happen?
die.
We're going to die. If we go out of the city, what's the worst thing that can happen to us? We're going to die. But we're going to die either way we go. So let's go out of the city. And perchance the Syrians might have mercy on us and we might live. But consider who these men are. What's ultimately going to happen to them anyway? They're going to die. They're leprous men. No cure for leprosy. They're going to die. It's just a matter of when. So they have nothing to lose. They're either going to die of starvation, they're going to die at the sword of the Syrians, or they're eventually going to die of their disease of leprosy. Would you consider that you've really got a lot to lose either way you go? Not much. So what do they do, Randy? They go to the camp of the Syrians. Nobody's there. What do they find there?
Lots of riches and food
in the camp of the Syrians. What happened to the Syrians?
They ran away.
Well, why in the world did they run away?
They heard an army and they thought that the king of Israel had hired the Hittites and the Egyptians.
Yeah, they did. Now, we talked about mercenaries. This was something that was not uncommon. So the Syrians think that this is what the king of Israel has done. He's hired some help. And so we hear the sound of these chariots and the noise of horses and a great host. And so they tuck their tail between their legs and they run. Now, when these lepers come into their camp, they find all this gold and silver and rich food and good things that the Syrians have left. Now, can you imagine coming from a state of starvation and you come into an encampment like that? You go into one tent and what do? I remember a young man back about 30 years ago who was raising watermelons just outside of Piggott, Arkansas. First time he'd raised watermelons. He had a field of watermelons. And when the truck came to buy the watermelons, the man culled the whole field of watermelons. He said he'd let them get a little bit too ripe, so he wouldn't buy any of them. Now, I know another young man that just happened to be invited to that field, and I had a pocket knife. Can you imagine standing in the field of watermelons that have been produced for sale? I don't know how many acres, maybe 200 acres. Can you imagine standing in the field of watermelons with a pocket knife? Why, you wouldn't even need a pocket knife. But can you imagine these men who are starving? Going into the camp of the Syrians. You go into this tent, there's all kinds of riches and food, and you just gorge yourself. And you move on from there to the next one. And then from there to the next one. And before long, you've got more stuff than you can carry. You've got more food than you can eat. And how did these leprous men respond? All right, this is not right. But there's more stuff here than we can handle. So we need to go tell the king. We can't hold our peace. Now there's a sermon in that, Randy, about the good tidings that we enjoy in Christ. And when we look at a lost world, how can we keep these things to ourselves? You develop that sermon. We'll find an occasion for you to preach that. That'd make a good sermon. But what we look at here is, they said, if we tarry till the morning light, punishment, this is verse 9, will overtake us. Now therefore come and let us go and tell the king's household. Now the king of Israel, who is that now? Jehoram, that's right. When word is sent to him that we've got this camp out here of the Syrians and they've just left everything, all kinds of food and silver and gold and all kinds of stuff. Let's just go get it. Was the king of Syria real anxious just to run out there and get all that stuff?
Israel,
thank you. King of Israel. Was he anxious to go out there and get all that stuff?
Thought it was a trap.
That's right. No, we can't be doing that. So they reasoned and they said, well, let's just take 5 of our horses that remain. That's interesting how that's put. What do you think's happened to all the other horses?
They ate them.
Yeah. What do you suppose the condition of these horses really is? Pretty sorry, but we got 5 left. So we'll take, in the text, I believe they took 2, verse 14, 2 chariots with horses, And the king sent after the host of the Syrians, saying, go and see. And they went after them unto the Jordan. And lo, all the way was full of garments and vessels, which the Syrians had cast away in their haste. And the messengers returned and told the king. What are the Syrians doing when they're fleeing? They're running. They're lightening the load to get away. And they're leaving everything behind, lest they lose their lives. Now, what does that mean is available for the people in Samaria? They can go in there and plunder all this stuff, and they're going to have all kinds of riches and good stuff to eat. Verse 16 said, the people went out and plundered the camp of the Syrians. So a measure of fine flour was sold for a shekel, and 2 measures of barley for a shekel, according to the word of Jehovah. And the king appointed the captains on whose hand he leaned to have charge of the gate. And the people trod upon him in the gate, and he died as the man of God had said, who spake when the king came down to him. And it came to pass, as the man of God had spoken to the king, saying, 2 measures of barley for a shekel, and a measure of fine flour for a shekel shall be tomorrow about this time in the gate of Samaria. And the captain answered the man of God and said, now behold, if Jehovah should make windows in heaven, might such a thing be? And he said, behold, thou shalt see it with thine eyes, but shalt not eat thereof. And it came to pass, even so unto him, for the people trod upon him in the gate, and he died. Now this captain that was appointed to take care of the dispensing of all of these goods, we know he died. The people trod on him. Well, why did the people trod on him? Well, they're hungry.
Like Walmart or Black Friday.
Yeah. Well, wasn't that what Elisha the prophet had told him? You're going to see this. Oh, he got an up close and personal view of it. But he didn't get to partake of it. Because in the people's desire for it, they trod on him. They just killed him and took these things. Now, interestingly enough, when we compare the text of chapter 7, verse 1, chapter 7, verse 16, prophet Elisha knew just exactly what he was talking about. But this particular captain had no idea how that could come to pass the very next day. But God brought it about just as he had planned. Now, let's continue to talk about Jehoram. I want to pass over the first part of the eighth chapter. And let's jump down in the text to the 16th verse of the 8th chapter. The 16th verse of the 8th chapter. It says, and in the 5th year of Joram, the son of Ahab. Who is this? Joram?
Jehoram.
That's right. The son of Ahab. Spelled a little different, but same man. The son of Ahab, king of Israel. Jehoshaphat, being then king of Judah. Jehoram, the son of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, began to reign. Now look carefully at that, because here we have 2 Jehorams reigning at the same time. Jenny?
I'm a little confused.
Uh-oh.
In 2 Kings 1, verse 17, So Ahaziah, brother of Jehoram, died according to the word of the Lord, which Elijah had spoken. Because
he had
no son, Jehoram, his brother, became king in his place in the 2nd year of Jehoram, the son of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah. Okay. So this seems to imply that Jehoram of Israel started reigning in the 2nd year of Jehoram of Judah. And then in chapter 8, it says Jehoram of Judah started reigning in the 5th year of Jehoram of Israel.
Right. I noticed that as I was reading through some of this. The difficulty of that I haven't resolved. We may need to talk some about that, but I don't have a ready resolution to that.
Is it possible, because it says that Jehoram of Israel went to Jehoshaphat of Judah for help with something, so is it possible that Jehoshaphat and his son were reigning at the same time?
It's thinkable. If possible, I would suppose. You're suggesting a possible transition That's possible.
Perhaps they had a lesser office of some kind.
Consideration, yeah. We can speculate to that end, but I'm going to have to give that more thought. I haven't come to a resolution myself on that. Okay? But what we do know is we've got two men with the same name reigning at the same time, one in Israel and one in Judah. Now, in verse 17, going back to 2 Kings 8, thank you, Jenny, for a good question. It says, 32 years old was he when he began to reign, and he reigned 8 years in Jerusalem. Now, this, as I understand it, is Jehoram, the son of
Jehoshaphat.
Yes, thank you. In verse 18, and he walked in the way of the kings of Israel, and as did the house of Ahab, for he had the daughter of Ahab to wife. Now, if I can get back to my chart, what to do with my clicker? Oh, I hit it. Oh, well, I want to talk about that some. I've got several charts on it. Let me look at this just briefly. We know that this Jehoram, the son of Ahab, as the thought continues down in verse 29, we'll go back and pick up some of this. In verse 29, chapter 8, verse 29, it says, and King Jehoram returned to be healed in Jezreel of the wounds which the Syrians had given him in Ramah when he fought against Hazael, king of Syria. And Ahaziah, the son of Jehoram, king of Judah, went down to see Joram, the son of Ahab, in Jezreel because he was sick. On into the ninth chapter, we see that Jehu is appointed to be king in Israel. And he does some mopping up of people. I mean, he kills a whole bunch of folks. And we're going to hold on that thought to talk about that in just a little bit later. But I do want to talk about Elisha. Let's back up a little bit. Elisha. Turn back, if you will, to 2 Kings chapter 2. 2 Kings chapter 2. I'm going to ask some of you, because this is familiar territory, to tell the story. When we talk about Elijah and the latter days of Elijah, we know that Elijah is to cross over the Jordan River, and eventually Elisha is to take his place. But that was conditional. When Elijah crosses over the Jordan, how does he do that?
He hits the water with his cloak and the water's parted.
That's right. Now, as far as I can recall, this would be the parting of the Jordan for the second time. The parting of the Jordan River the first time occurred when?
People came in.
When the people of Israel came into the promised land under the leadership of Joshua. Now, the condition upon which Elisha will be a prophet is?
If he sees Elijah ascend.
If he sees Elijah ascend. Look, if you will, at verse 11, chapter 2. And it came to pass, as they still went on and talked, that, behold, there appeared a chariot of fire and horses of fire, and which parted them both asunder, and Elijah went up by a whirlwind into heaven, and Elisha saw it and cried, my father, the chariots of Israel and the horsemen thereof. And when he saw him no more, he rent his clothes and he picked up the mantle, the garment of Elijah. And as he returns back, what does he do with the mantle? He strikes the waters of the Jordan just like Elijah did. And what happened to the Jordan River? It parted. This was the third time that the River Jordan parted. And he goes back across into the land of Israel on dry ground. All right, we'll have to stop there. We'll start with the works of Elisha in our next study. Be sure you do some reading of the text from this point forward in 2 Kings. Just keep reading. And then read the parallel text in the Chronicles. That's all in your lesson book, as you'll see the accounts given in the text. 2 Chronicles 21 and so forth.